This is Digital Story Podcast number 833, March 8th, 2022. Today's theme is Inside a Photo Assignment for Hire. I'm Derek Story. On Saturday morning, I climbed into the ID4 and plugged the address for the Fire Department Training Center into CarPlay. 15 minutes later, I was redirected to an overflow parking lot that required a hike back to the event. Undeterred, I grabbed my camera bag, a cap, and shades, and headed to the day's assignment. What happened before this moment and what transpired afterward is the topic of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I know some of you have been curious about the photo assignments that I work for clients. You know, it's an important part of my job because it keeps me in touch with the demands of real-world photography. You know, it's one thing to, you know, read articles and talk to people, all that kind of stuff. It's another thing to actually be out there having to capture images, edit them, and deliver them to people who are paying you money. It's a whole different thing. And it's something that I think helps keep me sharp, helps keep me in tune with the type of equipment that I need, and allows me to observe other photographers who are working these events as well. So this is all good stuff here. But I don't think I've ever just really sat down and explained how these things come about from start to finish, right? I mean, from the very beginning, like when someone contacts me, to the very end, when they thank me for the pictures that I've delivered to them. So that's what we're going to do today. And I have a great event to use as an example. It's one that I just photographed on Saturday. It's called Women's Public Safety Day. And this was something that I was contracted to photograph through the junior college, Santa Rosa Junior College, because they're a big part of this event, as is Santa Rosa Fire Department, Santa Rosa Police Department, Petaluma Police Department, Cal Fire. They're all part of this. And the idea of it is, well, actually, I have the blurb from the promotional flyer that circulated out around Sonoma County. And here's what they say. Women's Public Safety Day will provide young women ages 15 to 20 with a hands-on public safety learning experience. This immersive day will be led by local women from EMS, police, and fire departments, sharing what it's like to be a woman in public safety, both on and off duty. And I'll tell you, it wasn't just limited to young women 15 to 20 years old. And this was one of the things that I loved about this event, was that there were little girls there, girls that were 8 and 9, with their moms, with their dads, experiencing this, talking to female firefighters, talking to female police officers. And that's what really got me going, because I'm going, these girls realize they can do anything that they want, right? I mean, this door is wide open. And so it was a real joy to photograph, and this will be a fun assignment for me to talk about. All right, so how did this all come about? Well, way back on Friday, February 11th, I received an email from the SRJC Communications and Marketing Coordinator, and she said, are you available to cover Women's Public Safety Day on March 5th? You know, it's usually as simple as that, you know, just kind of a basic thing. Are you available on March 5th to do this thing? And I just shot back, yes, I am indeed. And that's the first thing that has to happen. In other words, the coordinator needs to know that I'm available. Now, we don't have to have all the details at this point. We don't really have to have much more information than what we've just exchanged, which is, it's happening and I'll be there. Okay, that's what we need. And so then I don't really hear anything all the way until right before the event. So on March 4th, the day before the event, Friday, March 4th, I receive a follow-up email, and it has the schedule of events. It has my on-site contact and cell phone number. And there's almost always a person on-site that I touch base with when I first get there. And if there's anything special that they want me to do, you know, that's my opportunity to find out. They know who I am, so if something's happening over here, over there, they know who to grab to photograph it, you know, that kind of thing. So the on-site contact was in that email, and then a suggested shot list. The shot list is really only the specific things, and then everything else is just like, you already know what to do. So I get all of that on the day before, on March 4th. And what I do, once I've seen the shot list and once I see the times that I'm going to be there, the schedule, all that, then I'll get my kit together. Now, generally speaking, my kit is pretty consistent for clients. In other words, when I'm doing a public relations shoot for the junior college, I know how they want me to shoot. I've been doing it for a while, and so I already know the cameras and lenses I'm going to be using. But what I also need to do, in addition to making sure that those lenses, filters, and so forth are there, is I need to check all my batteries to make sure all the batteries are charged. If I want to try something different, make sure that gear is in there. And, you know, just stuff like that. Make sure I have enough memory cards. Make sure they're blank already. You know, all that stuff. So it's very much the last minute check through that you would do for when you're going to go out and take a hike. When you're going to do any sort of, you know, photo assignment that, you know, you want to make sure that you have the right gear for it. So I get all that ready the night before, batteries charged, everything. Because the next morning, if something happens that delays me, then I just want to have my kit ready to go. So the kit is always ready to go the night before. I never put it together the morning of the shoot. And sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, I really need to put that lens in there. Oh, I should put that body in there, something like that. That's why I do it the night before, because it gets all those gears turning. I make a physical note of what I need to add to it. And then the next morning, I can add whatever item was that woke me up in the middle of the night, reminding me that make sure I bring this. By the way, for this shoot, since I'm waiting for my OM-1 to come, I don't have it yet. So I'm going with my standard kit that I've been using for this particular client, which is the Pentax DSLR, that 70mm f2.4 that I mentioned in the Tiny Lenses podcast, Pentax Zoom, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then I'm also carrying the X100V. And the way that I was working a lot on Saturday is I would leave the 70mm on the Pentax, which works out to be a 105 f2.4 for those kind of shots that I know they like. And then I was using the X100V for the stuff that was a little bit wider because it has an equivalent of 35mm lens, and just kind of going back and forth. I do change lenses during events, but I try not to change them any more than I have to. I usually like the little bit longer lens, and I don't use really long lenses. In fact, this is one of the things that I notice is very different about the way I shoot these events than the other photographers that are there. And there were three other pros there. They tend to have 70-200s on their cameras, and that's the way they're shooting these events. That lens is too long for me. And in fact, I got some shots that they didn't get because I had shorter lenses available. But I like to have shorter lenses and get a little closer to the action and not have the longer lenses where I have to stand farther away. All right, so I have everything ready to go the night before. I did not have any additions from the middle of the night. So then on Saturday, on the morning, I depart for the event, and I set it up so that my arrival time is earlier than I'm supposed to be there, because things almost always happen. So I try to give myself a 15 to 20 minute cushion. And in this case, I needed that 15 minutes because I get to the event and they don't allow me to drive into it. They say, no, you need to go to overflow parking. You would think that photographers, you know, people that have like credentials and stuff would get preferential treatment, but that's not really true for most local events. You're just, you know, in there with everyone else and no special treatment. Off to the overflow lot I had to go. And of course, these were police officers and stuff that were redirecting us, because everyone there was a police officer or fire department person or whatever. So I went to the overflow parking lot, which was like a 10-minute hike away. and then walk back. So that extra 15 minutes I had built in was consumed. And I was there on time, pretty close to being on time, maybe a minute or two late. But that's why I build in that little extra time. So I'm there, and the first thing I do is just sort of look around, just sort of get a feel for the event itself. And it's so funny, the very beginning of every event that I go to, I'm just looking around and I'm going, oh God, I hope there's something to shoot here. You know, that first kind of thing in my stomach is like, oh man, please don't let this be people just interacting at pop-up booths, because I'm so tired of those shots. I've been doing them for decades and they just bore the heck out of me. So I'm always looking for something else that isn't someone talking in a pop-up booth. And so at first, that's all I saw. But the good news is, and I knew this because I had the schedule events, that they were going to be actual activities happening. So I say, okay, cool. I'll just go meet my contact right now, chat him up a bit, see if he has anything he needs me to do, kill a little time until the events start, which was only about 20 minutes away. So I only had about 20 minutes to kill. And I do go around and I do try to get some of those shots. So I met my contact. He was really nice. We chatted for a few minutes and I said, okay, here I am if you need me. He told me the other photographer that's working for the JC that would be there. He was new on the job. So I went over and introduced myself to him, chatted him up for a bit. And then it was time to get going. And the events were fantastic. So this is the fire department training area. And so they have this really cool building that is about, I think it's about 4 or 5 stories tall. And it's a like concrete building. And so they use this, I mean, they can have smoke coming out of it. It has like at the very top, you can be on top of there and they can do rescues from like 4 or 5 stories tall. You can scale up the site. You can do all this stuff. I love this structure. And this is the first time I actually ever got to photograph it while it was in action. And the first event was with the brand new helicopter that the Sheriff's Department has. And so they simulated a fire in the building. There were people on top of the building. And so they had to rescue them off the top of the helicopter. And that's where someone's on a cable. They drop the cable down to the top of the roof with a person. The person straps the person they're saving into a harness. The helicopter lifts up, flies through the air with these two people dangling from a cable, and then safely drops them down over by a fire truck where they can get a treatment if they need it. So this was like really cool. And the first thing that I did when I noticed that this was getting ready to go, and this is a trick that I have learned from other pros that I respect over the years. The first thing that I'm thinking about is not the action, but it's the background. It's the background. And this is, I honestly think, is what separates my shots from a lot of other photographers that I work with at events. So right away I'm going, you know, I don't want that open field as the background, which is what would be the background if I stayed where I was in the middle of the event itself. So I go way out to the far perimeter of the event so that I'm shooting back to where all the fire trucks are parked, to where the building is, to where the police cars are, and to where all the people are. So I go way out, so I'm shooting back. Now that is the backdrop that I have for the activity that happens with the helicopter. And thinking backdrop first and then fill in the action, I tell you, it changes your shots. If you get nothing else from today's podcast, and this is for street photography, this is for event photography, this is for all sorts of stuff, figure out your background first and then position yourself so that the action comes into the background that you've already composed. So you've already composed a still life, and then you wait for the action to come into your beautiful composition. It makes a world of difference. Your shots will look different than most of the other people there that are taking pictures. Most of them will not have great looking backgrounds. Yours will. And yeah, anyone can capture the action, the helicopter flying in the air or landing, but you know, what is everything else in the shot? I did that shoot and that was fun. What a great way to start things out. And then the next thing they had was they were going to put out a fire in the building. And so again, this time what I do is I have the building in the background and then I get behind the people that are watching. And so now I'm photographing people interacting. And really what I was looking for were young women interacting with fire department and police department personnel while this event was going on. And, you know, by the way, I just have to say, all the police, all the sheriff, all the fire department, the EMTs, everyone that was there, they were great with the kids. I mean, they were fantastic with the kids. I just loved watching the way they talked with them, not at them. They made sure that they, you know, positioned themselves, whether it was, you know, getting down on the knee or getting the other person up in the helicopter or whatever, so that they were eye to eye. The conversations were they were just great. I mean, I just loved watching this. It made me feel really good about what was happening. So I wanted to photograph some of these conversations. I wanted to capture some of these things. So again, get the smoking building in the background. Now I'm looking for those interactions. And of course I find them. And in this case, the people were backlit. So I'm getting rim lighting on the hair and stuff. I've got the building, which goes a little bit into shadow, which I'm fine with. And then I'm using a little fill light, you know, to fill in the shot. And they looked really good. They looked really good. So that was the next series. And then the next series after that was the canine, the patrol officer, police officer who had, you know, the dog in the car, and how that whole thing worked. And then they had another trainer police officer who was in this like really thick suit. I mean, really super padded. And so then they showed that when the dog was assisting the police officer, let's say the police officer was being threatened, and he would send the dog after the person that was threatening him. So he showed how that whole thing works. So this guy had this like really thick suit. And this dog, when the door opened, the police officer had a button on his chest. So if he was in trouble, he could push that button on the chest. The door would open. The dog would come flying out. He would give a command and then the dog would do what he said. That dog would go flying toward the person who in this case would be the aggressor, right? And then this dog would just tear into this guy. Of course, fortunately, he had this really all this thick stuff on, but you're just going, whoa. So I got some really terrific action shots of this dog, which is just a beautiful dog, very muscular, springing into action, tearing after this guy. Of course, no one got hurt, but you don't get that opportunity very often. And the guy, even though he had this thick stuff on, it looked pretty cool. It looked like a dog was tearing after a guy who was doing something wrong. So I did that whole shoot. So that was fun. I had all these activities, the interactions, you know, where I'm using these activities as the background. Did some group shots, of course. Did some, you know, where they're facing the camera stuff. I had two people ask me if I would send them photos. And of course, the way that I handle that, the same way that I do for street photography, which is I have cards with me. I give them the card. I say, okay, all you have to do is write me, send me an email. Tell me, you know, who your person is. And I usually ask, you know, what is her name and all that. They tell me the name and stuff. And I usually remember it, but I have them describe it as well. And then they send me an email and then I send them the pictures back. In this case, both people that asked for cards sent me a follow-up email. Sometimes you don't hear from them, sent me a follow-up email, and I did send them pictures back, and I've already gotten thank yous from them. So that's the way I handle that whole thing. I don't write people's emails down and stuff. I just give them my card. If they really want the pictures, they'll send you the email. Then you can reply, but you put the ball in their court. And I think also on some level, and especially on Saturday when I was shooting little girls, right? You know, girls that were sometimes as young as, you know, 6 or 7. You want to put the ball in the parents' court and let them have control of the situation, right? Whereas, I don't know, I just feel better about doing it that way on all levels. So that worked out really well. And then the other thing that I do that I think is important is I talk to the other photographers on the shoot. Now, some of them I know, like for instance, the photographer for the local paper, the Press Democrat, was there. I know him, Kent. So, you know, he came up to me and said hi, asked me if I'd grown taller, all that kind of stuff. So those are the folks that I know. But then if I see a photographer there who looks like he or she knows what they're doing, and I haven't met them before, I go up and I introduce myself. So I did that with one of the photographers who was there, and she was a freelancer who was hired by the fire department to cover this event. And I go, all right, cool. So, you know, I asked her, you know, a little bit about what she was doing, and, you know, we just kind of talked. The conversation went really well. Then later on, we crossed paths again, and she said, you know what, I have to leave, and there's still one more event. Do you mind if I'm short on those shots? Can I hit you up? Can I send you an email? And, you know, is there any chance that I could use some of yours? So then I give her my card, and I say, you know, absolutely, you know, just send me an email, tell me what you need, and I'll get permission. And so that went really well. And then we crossed paths again, and she said, oh, by the way, I'm doing this shoot. I'm in charge of this big shoot that's coming up at the end of the month. I believe it was the Sonoma Film Festival. Sounds like a lot of fun. I've never covered it before. She goes, do you think you might be available for that? I might be short on photographers. And so then I said, yeah, of course. So then she gives me her card. And, you know, who knows? I may end up shooting that assignment. I may not. You know, just depends on how things go on her side. So there's a real benefit to connecting with the other photographers on the shoot. Don't be shy. Interact, because a lot of times those interactions will lead to good things. I mean, if you're a nice guy, you come across as a nice guy, you're not arrogant, you're not, you know, all that kind of stuff that we don't like in other people, then, you know, good things can happen. And who knows? I may end up shooting the Sonoma Film Festival later this month just because I went up and introduced myself and things, you know, took off from there. So we'll see how that goes. That is that day. Okay, so then Saturday ends. I go home. I think I'm going to do a bunch of stuff. I get home, I don't know, about 4 o'clock. I think I'm going to do a bunch of stuff. Yeah, I'm going to mow the lawn. I'm going to do all that. No, I am not doing any of that. I sat down on the couch and there was a movie on. I was drinking a glass of water there and I go, you know what? I'm not getting up off this couch, I can tell. And that's so funny how just, I don't realize how on I am during a shoot like that, during an event shoot, until I'm off and relaxing, and then all the air goes out of my balloon. So I ended up not doing anything worthwhile the rest of the day, just took it easy. Next day was Sunday, so I got all my chores done anyway. I felt great. That part always surprises me a little bit. That surprised me. All right, so what happens after that? Well, I have to get the pictures ready. So on Sunday, I began really early in the morning with my first cup of coffee, and I just want to do a sort. So it's just me and the cat at this point, me and Sylvester. I had 325 photos from that shoot. I whittled them down to 100 images. So I got that done during my first two cups of coffee. I got it whittled down from 325 to 100. Then the next thing I need to do is edit every one of those images. I do each one individually. Now, I do a lot of copy and paste adjustments for shots that are shot in similar lighting, but I do end up tweaking them, the crop, whatever. I was able to start on that a little bit on Sunday, but really finished up that job on Monday morning. By about 10 a.m. on Monday morning, I was done. I exported everything out, full-size JPEGs at 90 quality, full resolution, whatever size they were. Those go out. They go into a folder that goes into a Dropbox that I share with the client. And then I send the client email, let them know any particulars from the day, give them the link to the folder in their Dropbox. And I used to say it's in your Dropbox, but I've discovered they want the link to directly to that folder. Then I hear back. I always let them know, make sure you let me know that you got the images and everything looks okay. Heard back a couple hours later. Thank you, thank you. Everything looks great. Make sure you send us the bill. So that wrapped up on Monday. So we started a month ago just with the contact. The real action happened on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday morning. And then it's done and on to the next thing. In my case, getting ready to do the podcast. Right? I had a couple other things on my list to do first, but the podcast was the next thing. So that's inside a photo shoot. That's the way that I do it. I love these things, these events where I get out, I get to photograph things I wouldn't see often otherwise, and I get to meet people that I probably wouldn't meet otherwise. And that also is a big way that I get new jobs, is being out there, meeting folks, and mixing it up. So I hope you enjoyed sort of the inside peek. I think they're a lot of fun, and they help keep me sharp, but they also help keep me current for these conversations that you and I have on this show. Here's kind of a fun piece from Macworld magazine. I have the link to it in the show notes. It's titled Peak Performance Odds, Every Apple Event Rumor Ranked. Now, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, there's an Apple presentation on Tuesday called Peak Performance, right? This is the first one of the year. And it's always kind of fun to guess, you know, what's going to be shown at the event. You know, are they going to talk about this? Are they going to release that? And so Macworld did a really nice job of just going through all the rumors and then ranking them with the percentage that they think they might happen. Now, if you're listening to this after the Apple event has finished, then you get to compare what really happened to what the pundits predicted will happen, all right? And I got a couple things in here that I'm hoping for, but I just wanted to run through this list because I think these sort of things are a blast. Let me read you the first paragraph and then I'll just give you the list. Apple's first event of 2022 has certainly piqued our curiosity. While we usually have a pretty good idea about what's going to be released at this point, we don't always know. Apple's done a good job of keeping its peak performance event under wraps. So if you're playing along, here's what we're most likely to see on Tuesday. All right, you ready for this list? At 100%, the iPhone SE. Okay, the iPhone SE, they're guaranteeing that's going to be at this event. It'll have the A15 chip and 5G connectivity. At 95% possibility, the iPad Air. All right, so an updated iPad Air with the A15 chip and 5G connectivity. Then at 75%, the M1 Pro / M1 Max Mac Mini. Now, the reason why this has pretty high odds is because the current Mac Mini is one of the last computers that has the Intel chip in it in the Apple catalog of computers. And they think that this will be the time that they update the Mac Mini. So that gets a 75% possibility. All right, at 50%. Okay, so this could go either way. The new M2 processor, just in general, they'll announce the M2 processor. And part of their thinking is that the oldest M1 Macs are nearly 16 months old now. So it seems time to maybe release the next iteration of that processor. We'll see. If that happens, if the M2 happens, then maybe we'll see a MacBook Air. They have a 45% chance of that, thinking that usually when they have a new processor come out, the Air is one of the first computers to get it. At 40% possibility, the standalone display, and this would be a 27-inch standalone display, cheaper than the current Pro display. So the Pro display that's out right now is like $5,000. Obviously, they need a cheaper display in the lineup. This might be it, and it might get announced at this event. Okay, now we're really going down here. At 30% possibility, a 13-inch MacBook Pro with the M2 chip. And I'm really disappointed to see that because that's what I want. That's what I want to have happen. I'm hanging out for the 13-inch MacBook Pro with the new M2 chip. I'm due for a computer upgrade, but I'm not going to upgrade until that model comes out. It would be really great if they announced it at this event. We'll see. Macworld Magazine thinks only a 30% chance of that. At 30% also, a new iPad Pro with the M2 chip. At 20%, a new iMac Pro, the 27-inch version, not the 24-inch that's out right now, 20%. And then a Mac Pro, 15% possibility. So, okay. So those are the odds for what's going to happen at the event, the Peak Performance event. If you're listening to this podcast on Tuesday morning, you can watch along with the event on, you know, all the usual places and see how well they did. All right, even though I'm running long, I just want to get this in right here because this was just released today, an article on F-stoppers. I have the link in the show notes so you can read the rest of it. It's titled, The New OM1, Impressed by the Specs? Here's my hands-on review of the camera. This is by Ivor Rackham. And what Mr. Rackham wrote was a bunch of stuff that he liked and only one thing that he felt could be improved. Now, everything leading up to the part I'm going to tell you about right now is really interesting, so you might want to go take a look at the article. But I just wanted to give you a few things here that he liked. His background is, he writes, I was first trained in engineering. Consequently, I've always had a penchant for well-made precision instruments. When I lifted this camera, the OM1, from the box, my very first realization of the OM system OM1 was how well it fits that bill. It looks and feels like a high quality device, making it a pleasure to hold and use. So that was his first impression. Let me give you six things that he liked here. Alrighty. First, he enjoyed learning. There's a lot to learn with this camera, and he likes that. Next, there's a big leap forward in image quality. The increased dynamic range and operating speeds are noticeable in the real world, thanks to the new sensor and powerful processor. Third, I'm glad that OMDS chose to listen to Micro Four Thirds users and make improvements where they were needed and not chase more megapixels as dictated by the big brand marketing departments. I don't need bigger files. Fourth, the menu improvement. This will make it much more accessible to new users. It's color-coded and submenu names are better. Although a different layout from its predecessors, I liked the previous version, it's still familiar enough not to be completely alien. Fifth, I find the camera comfortable to use and the buttons easy to reach, and its name is much less of a mouthful than its predecessors. It also feels really well made, plus the new EVF is crystal clear. And sixth and finally, the computational photography features are useful in the real world and not gimmicks like fake bokeh. This is a serious photographer's camera. Alrighty. What could be improved? He had one thing in that they don't give a separate battery charger in the box. They rely on USB-C cable charging, in-camera charging, and I would agree with him on that. I think you should always get on a professional camera, a separate battery charger as well. So I agree with him on that nit. I love getting these first reviews coming in on the OM1. Of course, I'll be reviewing it myself when mine comes. A nice preview, though, of things to come. Right, a little virtual camera club news. First of all, big thanks to our Patreon members, the Inner Circle folks, who keep us going in the right direction and who support this podcast month in and month out. A big thanks to our Patreon members. If you want to learn more about becoming a part of the Inner Circle, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. It'll take you over there, nose around, and hopefully you will join us this year as well. And a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. These are the folks that supply everything everything that we need except for the printer. And I guess the photos. Everything except the photo and the printer for high quality inkjet output. They have the paper, they have the ink, they have the training. They have all the accessories such as envelopes and glassine sleeves and things like that. It is a wonderland for those who love to print. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Click on that, go over to our landing page, nose around, read some of the articles, check out all the different paper stocks and sizes available. Get some at your place so that you're ready to go when inspiration strikes. And they also have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for sponsoring this show. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Hope you enjoyed the inside peek at a For Hire photo assignment. Join me next week. We have lots of stuff to talk about, lots going on right now. Until then, stay safe, be productive. See you next Tuesday.